Greetings and salutations. You've successfully arrived at the Bloody Disgusting Network. The passage of time will now bring you to something strange, unique, and idiosyncratic. Have a good time.
Listen to this. This is the tape I found downstairs.
It has been a number of years since I began excavating the ruins of Kandar with a group of my colleagues. Now my wife and I have retreated to a small cabin in the solitude of these mountains. I believe I have made a significant find in the Kandarian ruins, a volume of ancient Sumerian burial practices and funerary incantations. It is entitled Naturan de Manto, roughly translated, Book of the Dead.
From the gnarled woods of Michigan
to the sun-kissed skyline of L.A.,
we are Halloweenies!
You said, I hope you understand when you read this letter that you're better off without me. Cause around me is stormy weather, stormy weather. It always surrounds me.
Live from New York, it's their Halloweenies! Happy Halloween, trick-or-treaters, dreamers, campers, suspects, and deadites. I'm your host tonight, Michael Maniac Ash Rothman, floating around in the multiverse of madness as we bend the plates of time in the wake of Warner Brothers deciding to push Evil Dead Rise to April 2023. So what are we going to do instead? Well, good question, and one we posed to all of our listeners a few weeks ago, because if you recall, we asked what lists you wanted to see us do. Some were weird, some were a little too niche, some of them we downright deleted, but a few of them did catch our eye. One of them was this, which was asking for the scariest episodes of television, which a question we might have tweaked on our own. But either way, it comes from you, the listeners, and we're very proud to have gotten the ideas because let's just say thanks to Warner Brothers, we're floating about until we get to Haddonfield. And this is good. We got some good ideas here. And we thought that talking about the scariest television, what better time than now when, we're all buying Halloween Oreos and dusting off our decor for spooky season. So that's what we're going to do. And joining me in the multiverse today are two brothers forged by madness and also blood and also their love for TV. Now, last month, I went with the supernatural reference to introduce the two of them. And given today's subject, I think I'm just going to double down on that again. So I copied and pasted the script from the last episode, and I'm going to just be using it. So call me lazy or call me Al. Hashtag Chevy, if we're talking about SNL, keeping an SNL dominion. He's the oldest of the two, the Dean to Max Sam. See, it still works. Justin, say hello. And since we're talking about episodes, tell me your go-to horror show growing up.
Live from New York.
it's
the Halloweenies.
It's so dumb.
My favorite horror show today is probably SNL. It's really fallen off the plank in the last couple of years. We say that every 4 or 5 years. It looks like they're going to do a fresh reboot, so fingers crossed. What was my go-to horror show? I would have to say once it hit syndication, because we did not have HBO around this time. I think it was the mid-90s. Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
Finally went to, at least where I was in Orlando, to Fox. It would be on Fox at around, I think, from like 10 to 11 on Saturday nights.
Yeah, you're right. I remember that.
And I get the old VHS tape out there and I tape them all. I didn't realize until years later how heavily edited they were. But I will say they were still pretty creepy. Even looking back on how edited they were, they still worked on me. I loved the hell out of that show. I can still rewatch a lot of it today.
And you've gone back. I mean, I know, granted, for some reason, HBO Max hasn't unloaded them on there, which seems like
bizarre.
The easiest slam dunk they could do on Halloween is just to unload them all. But anyway,
just dump them all in a Halloween or something like that.
Yeah. That would be a huge splash, actually. But I did buy the first season of Tales from the Crypt a few years ago, and man, it's dark. It's like,
it's really dark.
Really fucking grim.
Especially the first season.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to maybe talk about Tales from the Crypt coming up. But First, we have a beast from the crypt himself, the Wolfman of the Night. Come on down and tell us your favorite horror show. Is it Buffy the Vampire Slayer starring Seth Green of Austin Powers fame as Werewolf Oz? Is that one of them?
Oh, well, this is Wolfman Mac. And
featuring.
Would you, if you were like Wolfman Mac, though, is your intro for SNL, would you be like chowing down on a human being in Central Park and then look up and wave?
No, I think I'd smile, laugh, and then look at the moon like, oh my God.
You're like time. On a date, like, ugh.
It's time. Oh, the rest God. Of the episode's just me turning into a werewolf for 30 minutes. But
they're running around for chains. You
what
know.
Was the question? My favorite werewolf depiction your on
favorite,
television?
No, your favorite horror show. Same question as Justin.
A horror show.
I was being presumptive.
Oh, come on now. It's got to be The X-Files.
Were you a murderer?
I mean, that's the first show that is the first show that I really... That and Seinfeld. So I was going to say Seinfeld, but...
Was The X-Files your first sexual reawakening when, you know, Dana Scully was
That was Hey Dude. That was Hey Dude on Nickelodeon.
Okay.
Christine Taylor?
With Christine Taylor, Ben Stiller's
that's
wife.
That's right. I had a confusing dream, and I thought, you know, Lord bless these ladies.
Now, if you have dreams and they're like set in fictional universes such as these TV shows, do you hear the theme songs? Like when you like had a dream about Hey Dude, especially involving
the
Christine
theme
Taylor,
song was the only thing playing the only thing? For okay. the entire dream.
Okay.
Even when I left that realm.
Yeah, that's
nothing sexier
Jesus.
Than the theme song from Hey Dude.
For Hey Dude, man,
nothing
Jesus
sexier.
Christ.
Oh yeah.
You know, I'd like to sit here and say the X-Files were mine growing up, and they certainly were, but like if I'm looking at like real salad days of the Roffman, the young Roffman, I got to keep it Nickelodeon as you do. My sexual reawakening was also was actually not Hey Dude, but Are You Afraid of the Dark? Because let's just say I had the senses were overwhelmed with the spooky of that show, especially the opening credits. I remember that in addition to Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Now, hold everything. You actually said your sexual awakening.
I did. Well, I have a love affair with horror, as I can say. You know, hug
That's
me horror.
True.
It's more like fuck me horror fuck for me, horror. As far as I'm concerned. But out there, as you see on horror Twitter, you get a lot of people out there that like profess their love for horror. I'm just gonna say right now, I have a romantic involvement with horror, and it started with Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and also. I got to be honest, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Are You Afraid of the Dark was huge. The Zeebo the Clown, which I believe is the first episode.
Well, Mike, you might be stepping on something here.
That's true, and I don't want to step on it too far, but I will say that was certainly an awakening for me. But yeah, love X-Files, love Tales of the Crypt, love Are You Afraid of the Dark. And I think that says a lot about the generation that we grew up in and says a lot about who we are as horror curators here on Planet Earth, the wonderful Planet Earth. But anyway, let's talk about horror TV a little bit more. We've got 10 episodes to name. We're going to round robin this as we're wont to do here on the Halloweenies. And the 10th, as always, will be up for us three to debate. I'd say we should try to avoid doubling up on the shows to push.
I think
for
we'll pull it off. I'm willing to guarantee we will not overlap.
You said doubling up on the shows.
I know. I'm wondering.
I'm pretty sure we're not going to double up on the shows either.
You know what? You know, Mike.
There's only one.
I have an alternate, so I think we'll be okay.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Interesting.
And I can pull into the deep reaches and depths of my scarred mind for an episode if it need be.
Well, I'll say this: if we do double up, no biggie deal. I mean, who gives a shit? What are we going to do? Get sued? Give me a break. It's more spooky content for you, you know, to watch. And honestly, the show that I'm thinking about that we could potentially double up, it's the easiest one that's available to stream. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned. So last time we did a round robin, we went by age. I would, you know, we could do alphabetically. We could just, you know, raise our hand first and who wants to go. I don't really know where to go with this because... we've done so many configurations on this before. I think Mac has kicked it off. I think Justin has kicked it off. One thing I will say, I don't think I've kicked it off. So
Let's just go reverse age.
Reverse age? Okay, so I'm the youngest here. So, yeah. All right. So then
I'll go you, Mac, me, Mac, you.
Okay.
You, Mac, me.
Because these lists are so short, can we just go Mike, me, you, Mike, me, so that it's more
we
varied?
That's fine. All right. Well, then I'll kick it off.
I guess if we were drafting, it would make more sense to do it my way. But say whatever the hell you want.
Well, to be fair, we are in draft season right now. How'd you do on your Final Fantasy or Final
Mike,
Fantasy?
Mike, glad you asked. This is Justin football. Gerber, very excited as we're recording tonight. Is opening kickoff night.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, me too, actually.
But Mac, big question for you. Who do you got tonight? I know this is sports guru Mac we're talking to here. Big fan, big sports fan. Mac, well, who do you got? You got the Rams or the Bills? What's going on tonight?
You know, the jury's out, but gotta go with the Rams.
Is Jim Kelly playing tonight on the Bills or Doug Flutie? No?
Well,
okay.
Again, you know, I don't want to talk. It's kind of like talking to your pitcher and a no-hitter, you know? I don't want to talk about it too much.
Well, the good news is, tonight. Mac, is that at least one of those names I mentioned is played about 30 years ago, around the time my first pick first aired. So you know the theme. You know the voice. You know the logo. If you grew up as a latchkey kid in the early 90s like I did, Unsolved Mysteries was both your best friend and your worst nightmare. I'm going with, okay, well, I got two picks, and I got to go, I'll explain why. We talk a lot about how we're all latchkey kids on this podcast. I just did right now, and I do a lot on, especially the Losers Club, because I think that King writes a lot of latchkey kids, because I think that still seems indebted to like the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but I cannot stress enough the life of a latchkey kid when you talk about a show like Unsolved Mysteries. Like for me, and I don't know, I can't speak for you guys, but like it was like on constant rotation every evening for me. Like without fail, if I turn on the television, I would see Unsolved Mysteries on. And sometimes it was like Unsolved Mysteries and Sightings, and that was just like a fucking double whammy for me.
Well, I remember watching it when it was like literally airing for the first time. I think it was on Fox. Yeah. It would be on Fox
like
on Sundays or something like that. Yeah. I remember vividly watching that.
Because it was like, was it Unsolved Mysteries and America's Most Wanted around the same time?
Yes,
America's,
I think that's correct.
And also our Emergency 911.
Oh, yeah.
Rescue 911.
Which is a little more like kind of a reprieve.
A little more brutal.
At that point. Also brutal, but at the same time, you're like, well, at least it's a car that hit me and not some ghost or a UFO or whatever, which I guess in hindsight, probably should have cared more about the car.
Well, I'll let you say what the episodes are before I chime in, because there is one that I can't put my finger on, but I'll get into that when I...
Okay, so...
Well, I have to apologize. It was on NBC and CBS.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I do remember
watching it.
Because of streaming services now, it's so fucking easy to forget when these shows are on. Like, I mean,
I know.
I remember when they had like Twin Peaks streaming on something that wasn't, it was like, I think it was something beyond ABC. I think it was like CBS. They
it was
had
on
it
CBS
on
for a long time.
It's like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. It makes no sense. Okay, anyway. So the thing I loved about Unsolved Mysteries, especially as a latchkey kid, but I also hated because it really was terrifying, was just how the show really embellished like every creak and noise in your house. Like it was as if like everything that Robert Stack was talking about was somehow down the hall or in your parents' bedroom or just waiting to pounce on you. And I think for me, the success of the show was all about the conviction of it. And like, it was like every episode was designed to just get under my skin. And the one that really did, the one that fucking threw me out of the house. Season 3, episode 16, the Kelsey house, where it was also called Samuel's Ghost, and it debuted on January 23rd, 1991. Now, this one, and I say this with all honesty, this one, I did run out of the house as a kid because of this. I was so scared. And it's exactly like the kid in the episode itself. So basically, I'll give a quick rundown of what the Kelsey House is. It's this reputed haunted house that was located near Reno, Nevada, and then it was moved to its current location from Virginia City, where it resided next to a cemetery for many years before being moved to 600 Geiger Grade in Reno, where then it became a haunted residence. That's very confusing what I just said, but either
way,
it's in Reno.
This house around?
I don't know. They move houses around a lot back then. I mean, fuck, the Myers house was moved around in Pasadena.
But that's
not
haunted though. That would have burned it to the ground.
I know. Well, the first series encounters went from like 77 to 81, and the basically all the members of the family like kept seeing things. Like they would hear sounds of footsteps walking up and down the stairs. They would hear a swishing sound as if like someone's dress was being dried to the ground. And there was a tall male ghost nicknamed Samuel who appeared in the kitchen and the bedrooms. And a lot of the manifestations centered around the kids. And so for me, I remember it was like for the first time I remember hearing about how ghosts could follow you from home to home. And that really scared me. And then what really put me over the edge was the reenactments. And now the reenactments in hindsight are kind of cheesy, but they're also really affecting because they're so dreamy and lucid, and they're very grounded and with a lot of people that you just would look like your neighbors. And so the one scene that scared the shit out of me was this kid that ran out of his house because he saw the ghost, and he looked behind him and the screen door was screaming back and forth. And in the window, you can see the faint image of like someone staring out at him. And I like lost it. I couldn't handle it. I like ran out of the house, and I remember sitting on my fucking front stoop for like 2 hours. This is before cell phones. This is like early 90s. So I waited until my mom came home. She was at the time, I think, either a teacher or a pediatrician. So she just took forever to get home. And I just remembered like refusing to go back inside. And it scared the hell out of me. And I revisited it recently. Still pretty scary. And honestly, a lot of the stuff on this show is still pretty scary too. I mean, I double up one that's a little bit more for the adults out there. It's actually from the first season. You can go check out the Queen Mary episode. It's from season 1, episode 3. And it's the Halloween edition of the series too. So again,
Mary. That's your bonus one, you're saying.
That's my bonus one. If you really want, like, the first one I mentioned might not scare you as an adult, because it certainly is more geared to the kids. But like the Queen Mary one, I dare you to watch that at night and not be spooked out. Like there's one like sequence where the tour guide that worked on the Queen Mary, which by the way is a decommissioned ship that's off of the coast of, I believe, LA or the Bay Area. I can't remember.
Correct.
But
you're correct.
Either way, they do the reenactments in this one, and one that involves a tour guide where she talks about how she was walking late at night out of it and turned around on the stairs, and this guy was just standing right behind her, and it was just a ghost, and it vanished. Like literally, like she went to go move forward and then went back, and then there was no one there. It is so scary. And I watched it recently last year, and it still got under my skin. So yeah, Unsolved Mysteries, you still got it. Unfortunately, the Netflix reincarnation fucking sucks. So yeah.
That's fired.
That's fired. So that's my
opinion. Well, my one of my selections was going to be the Queen Mary one. So you took that away from me.
Wait, really?
No.
Okay,
no.
I was going to say, there's no way. There's no way, because you don't believe any of this shit. So, you know, you'd be like, this is boring.
No. I'm like John Carpenter when it comes to this. I love it. I love it when they can trick me into believing on the big screen.
Okay.
I haven't seen those, but now I will seek them out. There was an episode. It was about UFOs, and it was very similar to an X-Files episode. It's the one. It's the early episode in season 1 where they go out to investigate the three lights.
Dancing
Seth in the Green's sky. In
that. That's really
and there
on.
Is an episode of Unsolved Mysteries about similar sightings of three lights in the sky, and then it's all, you know. But of course, you know, there's no real recreations or you know, I mean, it's all like made up or whatever, but the way that they shot that show is just, it is very weird and creepy, and it really worked at the time.
It's funny. I'm thinking about like, it's like a chicken and the egg thing. I can't remember what came first, but when X-Files hit, I think it just hit at the right time.
It did.
I mean, Unsolved Mysteries was big. Sightings.
Yeah.
There was some other, remember they had that alien autopsy show. I mean, just the right time.
And we all grew up with it too. I mean, think about it. Like we're kids post, I mean, I guess we are still part of the Amblin generation for the most part. Like we're offshoot of it. You are especially, Justin, but like,
oh, I lived the whole thing. I remember living through that. Yeah.
But to like be able to like, I mean, we had the marvel and splendor of Close Encounters and E.T. And I think that built on just us being curious about what really was going on and looking up all the alien conspiracies. And I think so much pop culture capitalized on that, especially when you consider the fact that like so much of X-Files and even Unsolved Mysteries is like a post Watergate thing, right? Like it's like us like obsessed with like what the government's hiding. And I think those two things, at least for me speaking personally, I know that was certainly an obsession. I mean, it's pretty serendipitous and also not really coincidental, I guess, in the sense that, you know, Oliver Stone's JFK is like, what, 2 years before The X-Files
also?
Yeah,
91, so, I think.
I mean, yeah. I think a lot of that kind of mixed together for us to just think, like, what is being hidden from us? And, like, why is there so much evidence to the contrary? And, like, you know, or at least quote-unquote evidence. Well, we have, actually, now we do know because there is evidence because the fucking government released a lot of it. So, yeah, creepy stuff. Creepy stuff.
Good show. Fun show. I think it's probably airing somewhere, the old episodes. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
I think a lot of it's on YouTube, probably.
Yeah, the ones I found were on YouTube for sure. And
honestly, a couple of things I'm going to mention today are just sitting there. I think, remember when YouTube was a real stickler for copyright?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we got to the point that if it's a movie that doesn't really have a strict, if nobody really owns the rights anymore to these movies and TV shows, they're kind of just, to paraphrase it's Tom almost, Noonan in The Heat, they're kind of just floating out there. You know, you just got to know where to get them. Where to grab
Heat too. Exactly.
It's just too taxing to have people constantly taking that stuff down and searching all day.
It's kind of like music.
It.
It's just out there.
It's impossible.
All the stuff is just out there. Hey, I'm not complaining. I'm sure the creators are pissed off, but oh well.
Speaking of out there, so in the mid-80s, Steven Spielberg was responsible for creating a show called Amazing Stories.
Oh, yes. Here we go. I know what you're doing.
Many a director and actor guest starred on this show. And I believe it was Martin Scorsese himself who directed the episode called Mirror, Mirror. Now, let me just set this up. To give anything too much away would really spoil the ending, and God, worth watching and not knowing the ending. An egotistical horror novelist dismisses the supernatural in real life, but he is forced to reconsider his disbelief when he finds himself pursued by a bizarre figure with a misshapen face. The strange thing, he can only see the man when he looks in the mirror. So,
God,
essentially, this thing is, he looks in the mirror, this thing is a certain amount away behind him, right? Every time he looks in the mirror, it gets a little closer, moves a little closer. So, of course, he just spirals the paranoia, and it's just a great episode, great ending. I haven't watched it in a long time, but I still feel like it would hold up. I get chills thinking of, because I remember watching it with Justin when we were really young, and we think we walked into it, we didn't know what we were watching.
Exactly, because they re-aired Amazing Stories in the 90s. I think it was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
And they weren't always like horror.
No. Some of them were like really like fun and sweet, or dramas, you know, and this was not that.
But, you know, this is also, I mean, when they aired it, this is before we even could hit like the guide button to see what it was. If you didn't have like a TV guide readily available, you didn't know what it was. And so I had no idea it was Martin Scorsese. I didn't know it was an Amazing Stories episode.
Yeah.
I just, it was in the middle of the afternoon, and I still, even to this day, I get freaked out by it. I did stumble upon it. I don't think it's available anymore, but that episode really is creepy. And it's, I mean, I feel like Scorsese only really directed one other, like, what you would call a horror, maybe two other. I guess Shutter Island's more of a thriller, though, and I think Cape Fear's more of a thriller. But this was like a horror, supernatural, and it was so good. I wonder why he never decided to go back to that. Because it's an incredible episode.
It is strange.
Thing, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe, what if he just like went all in on like a fucking ghost movie for like, after he does like Killers of the Flower Moon or something? You know what this kind of sounds like? This reminds me of...
Oh, by the way, the lead, I don't know if you said this, Mac, it's Sam Waterston.
Yeah, I couldn't... Love Sam Waterston. I was just trying to find the cast list here.
He's great in it. But Law and Order Zone.
This does seem familiar to like a couple things, like Mirror Image and then Twilight Zone. It reminds in the same way of like something ominous in either the distance or something that you can't quite catch, but it keeps just getting more and more magnified as the episode goes. But also, it seems like King absolutely cribbed for this for The Road Virus Heads North, which is the short story about like a painting where something just keeps showing where the murder is going to get closer and closer to you.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the one? Isn't that Skeleton Crew?
No, it's in Everything's Eventual.
I think about the mirror one in Skeleton, in Skeleton Crew. There's also a mirror one about the
attic.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's a mirror, isn't it? Anyway, I can't remember.
Yeah. The Reaper's Image?
No, but Mike,
the Reaper's Image.
Have you seen this?
No, this sounds fucking
man,
great.
Mike,
you'll love it. Watch it with the lights out.
Ooh, maybe some
like
popcorn.
Like McFarlane would say.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's my first pick, yeah.
You know who was also I mean, I feel like there were a lot of horror veterans that came off there. Didn't Mick Garris work on a shitload of Amazing Stories also?
Yes. I think that's how he got close to a lot of those people.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. They got to be straight. I feel like, didn't they? They tried to do like a redux for it for Apple TV Plus.
They actually had a whole season, but nobody talked about it.
God, that's fucking
nobody
crazy.
Talks about most stuff that's on Apple TV.
I know. Well, we just talked about that on the Losers Club with Lisey's story about how, like, is anyone ever going to watch that? I don't know. Anyway, Justin, your pick.
Their loss.
I know, right, seriously.
Well, I was thinking about this list, and I mean, obviously, look, we love horror here at the Halloweenies, and we could go on and on about, you know, certain things we've seen in recent years, but I was thinking about stuff that truly just disturbed me, because, you know, I love It Follows, for example, Hereditary, recent horror that really does kind of scare you as opposed to just having a good time at the movies, but stuff that really sticks with you and maybe even alters your brain forever is the stuff that you see when you're really young. For instance, the stuff that we've already talked about is stuff that we watched when we were like 10 years old,
right.
You know, 10, 11 years old. We're not firing up, oh, I'm going to talk. Now, granted, there's some stuff recently that I don't want to step on. So I'm looking back in time. And this is going to be really off the beaten path here. It's a show debut. This episode was January 24th, 1979. So
Jesus.
I remember watching this. It was in syndication for years and years. And it was on, and I watched it in Phoenix, Arizona in the late 80s. And it was season 3, episode 19 of Eight is Enough, starring Dick Van Patten and Betsy Buckley, or Betty Buckley from Carrie, the teacher in Carrie. She's also a great Broadway star. And Dick Van Patten, you've seen, and he's like the king in Spaceballs. Everybody knows. You'll know if you've seen him.
Yeah.
But this episode came around, when I watched at least, shortly after I saw Psycho for the first time. And now Psycho is famously my first kind of adult horror movie that I ever saw. So I'll read you the plot of Eight is Enough, which was, by the way, a lighthearted family drama in the late 70s, early 80s. Like, it was not, there was no laugh track, but it was kind of just like a lighthearted family drama. They dealt with some stuff, but it wasn't too serious, wasn't too goofy. So the plot was, I'm noticing now, this wasn't even a Halloween episode. It was January
of 1979.
Very strange, but this was.
The episode was called "Release in January."
This Eight is Enough episode was January 24th, 1979.
Wow!
But it was called Horror Story, and the plot is when the power suddenly goes out all over Sacramento. Like, this is like the whitest show you've ever seen in your life, by the way. When the power suddenly goes out all over Sacramento, the Bradfords are left in rather sticky predicaments. Tom and Abby get stuck in an elevator, while most of the others are stuck at the house with a man who creepily looks like Norman Bates. So the way it's filmed, they don't film it for laughs. They kind of play it really straight. Like, you're thinking, oh, wow, maybe in season 3 of this family drama, somebody's going to get murdered for some reason. But I even watching it yesterday on the wonderful archive.org. It's digitally remastered, so it looks like I'm watching something from yesterday, even though you can't find this episode anywhere else legally streaming
it's
anywhere.
So strange.
Like, but I was watching, it was all coming back to me. It starts off with this, one of the daughters is watching Psycho, and she's getting creeped out by it. And that night, and the guy looks just like I remember him looking 33 years ago. This guy looks just like Anthony Perkins. And it's like a power house. He knocks in the house. He's like, there's something wrong, and they let him in. And like, oh my God, he looks so like Anthony Perkins. And that just stuck with me. That creeped me out. And the whole episode, like I said, they play it pretty straight. Another family member is stuck in a rainstorm in her car. And there's like somebody like kind of surrounding the car. But of course, everything is explained. The power goes back on. The elevator works again. The guy next door is looking for his lost dog or some bullshit. And then the Norman Bates character
turns
was
around.
Genuinely looking to help them because lights had gone out and he knew that they were all alone. But man, I'll send a picture. This guy looks just like Anthony Perkins. And again, when you're 8, 9 years old,
yeah,
and you're thinking about Psycho, how scary Psycho is, and this guy pops up in your freaking normal, normie family drama that's in syndication that should be safe, it really threw me for a loop. I have to say, it's crazy, but Eight is Enough, Horror Story, really disturbed me in my youth.
I wonder if this happens anymore. Like the stumble upon, you know, because cable was so important
gone.
With that. Yeah, that's
right?
I mean, it really is. I mean, unless you have like Pluto TV or some shit like that, but like, it's just not the same. And I mean, especially the mentality of what, you know, channel surfing was. I mean, I would get home. Sure, there were some regular things, my go-tos, but for the most part, I would flip. And sometimes I would stumble upon things. Like, that's how I found out about, for fuck's sake, Child's Play. I mean, I was not playing one day, and so I just stumbled upon it. And I remember being scared and turning it off. And it's in the same thing with this 8 is enough probably for you, where you were probably flipping around, you saw this, you caught it, and it stuck with you. And I think that's so important for, like, especially in your formative years, when you're like, when things are just, you're like soaking up everything. And I think that's so, that's the same. That's what happened with me with Unsolved Mysteries. I mean, it was a stumble upon for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I think it's one of those things where, especially when you're that young, if you're just channel surfing and you come across something that you think you're not supposed to be watching,
yep,
you immediately get really invested and you watch it. Yeah. So yeah. I can see that happening, even though that show, Justin, like you said, seemingly is just like a normal sitcom or whatever, you'd be like, something's off here, something's wrong.
There's something off. That's what it really was. Like, that shouldn't be watching on this show. Why is this happening?
That's what makes it so disarming, right? I mean, that's what David Lynch was so good at in early on, was that, I mean, that's literally what Blue Velvet is all about.
Yep.
Is like the disarmament of the peaceful, tranquil American life and just the underbelly that's within. And I mean, that's Lynchian in itself. So, I mean, more often than not, that tends to be scarier than the things that try to be scary. So
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree.
Toss up those pencils in the air and spit out your sunflower seeds, because...
Son of a bitch.
I know. I'm sorry. My next pick is The X-Files. Now, you all know what I'm going to pick. This is an episode that, we all talked about X-Files the next day all the time, especially, which is actually pretty astounding, because when I was growing up, especially this time of this episode's airing, X-Files was on the Fridays. So you had to go literally 3 days, 2 days until you got to the school on Monday to talk about it. And I'll never forget the Monday after this. So this debuted January 13th, 1995. So probably the 16th, January 16th, 1995 at lunch. I'll never forget, what was her name? Kristen Barker, or it was Lauren Parker. I can't remember either one of them, talking about, oh my God, did you watch The X-Files? And that was when, and I remember watching it, and I remember saying, yeah. And I was surprised that they had watched it. And they're like, that was the most disturbing thing I've ever seen. And I at that time I had already seen like Silence of the Lambs. So it was kind of like, all right, well, I'm there. And it just really, I could see the ripple effects of it. And everyone was talking about it. And that is Irresistible, season 2, episode 13.
Oh, yeah.
For Excellent. Me, I
what
still,
season was that again, Mike?
Season 2.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, Donnie Faster, Nick Chinlin. I don't think there's anyone in the X-Files lore. I mean, granted, they derail his character eventually in a few seasons later. But in this point, I don't think there's a darker, more disturbing episode than this one. And it's because, unlike the ghosts and the monsters of the week and the UFOs, obviously, this was kind of a real monster. And a lot of it deals with Scully's PTSD. So, you know, Donnie Faster becomes more of like a demon, which they lean into in the fucking follow-up episode, which is stupid.
No,
but...
Yeah, no, go ahead, Mike.
That's the error.
I have something I want 100%. To say.
But in this episode, he's really just a fetishist, like a death fetishist who murders women. He exhumes corpses. He saves their hair, saves their fingernails. And this is coming at a time when I mentioned, you know, America's Most Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I think I was still figuring out that, like, this shit is happening left and right. And I would, you know, we saw a lot of kids that were getting lost and all this other stuff. And I think a lot of the kids, especially in my generation, were really scared of these type of people. And so to see it creep into the X-Files, it's almost like the opposite of what we just talked about. It's like, wait, this is a horror show about, you know, mythological things. Why is something real like this creeping in? And it was like the same sort of feeling that you're discussing with It Is Enough. And even now, like, this is an episode I sometimes skip when I'm doing rewatches, because it's just not a fun episode. It's so disturbing.
It's so unpleasant.
It's really unpleasant.
Anytime I watch any of the seasons, I start with this episode, actually.
Oh, yeah, right. You're like
on repeat.
Like beating off in the corner to Danny Fasco. I'm just joking.
I don't know about that. But
but yeah, this is such a fucking dark episode. And
yeah.
It's funny too, because like I had read that, like, I guess they had written Donnie Faster is supposed to be a necrophiliac, which Fox
right,
was like,
a little too dark
no,
back
can't
then.
Do this.
Now
we're not
like,
doing that.
No problem.
They'd be like, oh, please put it in.
See, I feel like one of those things where, you know, censorship works in your favor, because I feel like when I watched it, I kind of felt like that was what was going on, even though they didn't show it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I will say, as someone who always leaned more into the episodes that give me the ghouls, ghosts, goblins, and little green men, there's like a 2 second moment towards the end of the episode where you're like, maybe something else is going on here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think as an adult watching it, it doesn't matter. It still works both ways. But yeah, to me, it's just, but I like that they don't answer it in that episode. That's more creepy. It's always more creepy to let the viewer kind of decide or not settle it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because then
they're
left like frustrated, like, well, was he or is he? But and does that matter? Or is everybody are capable of that kind of darkness? Like,
well, and the thing is, it shouldn't matter. And they decide to make it matter in the second one, where it's just obvious what the situation is. And I mean, it ultimately doesn't affect the first one at all, because another episode later. And, you know, but that, I mean, that first one is still so good.
Yeah.
And written by Chris Carter.
Yeah. Who, I mean, at that point, season two, he is just the MVP. Like, he's so fucking good in that run. And I still argue that season two is probably still my favorite run of the X-Files. Like, a few years ago, we did a whole ranking of all the seasons.
You could argue for any of those first
four. They're fucking great.
Especially.
Really? Yeah.
I still love some later seasons, but those first four are kind of like, there's reasons you could defend any of those seasons.
Well, if you want a good spooky run for Halloween, just do the run that Irresistible's in from season two. It's just like one after another of just terrifying fucking Monsters of the Week episodes, and they're awesome. So, yeah, I mean,
great choice.
Love X-Files. I apologize, Matt, because I know that we all love that. This is the show that I thought that was going to be the one that we.
This is why I deliberately avoided it, because I assumed that somebody else.
Well, there's one other show I avoided because of that. So,
okay.
Well, I had one queued up, but I'll save it. I'll save it for another day.
Okay.
Or perhaps when we're banding around at the very end of this episode, I'll mention it.
Well, or you could just throw it out now. I mean, if you want to. I mean,
well, I don't want to get into the. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
I don't want to ruin flow of the episode.
Okay.
So my second is a pilot of a show. Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh man!
Trick or treat.
Oh man.
Is that,
I have a Tales from the Dark Side also.
Okay, sorry, Justin. Got to think of something else.
Oh, man.
Now, this is an episode. It's the pilot of the show. Bernard Hughes plays Gideon Hackles, essentially an old man who's kind of got the deed on everybody. And everyone's borrowed money from him, et cetera, from the town. And every year on Halloween, he creates like a haunted house and has the kids of the town come in. And if any of the kids can make it through the house, then like he'll let the parents out of their debt, right? So it's like one of those weird situations where you have the parents like forcing the kids to go in this haunted house. And let's just say one Halloween he has a visitor of his own, and where it doesn't work so well in Irresistible Part Two, it really works in Trick or Treat.
Oh yeah.
It's really fun and scary. And again, you know, I was thinking of this list, and my third pick is not something that scared me when I was a kid, but I do think that these still hold up and they're still really fun and scary, and you have to suspend your disbelief. You know what I mean? You really have to put yourself in the time in which these were made. You can't scoff at effects. You've really got to just watch it on your own, lights out, headphones on, preferably. I feel when you have headphones on and the music and everything's streaming right to your ear, I think that it's like there's no escape from what you're looking at, even if you close your eyes. You know, it's just it's really effective. So I would absolutely suggest watching this. It's directed by Bob Balaban.
Oh, I love Balaban.
Written by Franco Amore and George A. Romero.
Oh, so who
created the show.
Episode. Wow.
No. So, and also, you got Alf's own Max Wright.
Oh, King's Dominion.
In the episode, so.
That's right. He works for him, I think. Yeah.
You know what's crazy?
But you said Bernard Hughes, right, is the old man.
Yes. And
you know Bernard Hughes
he's fabulous.
He's Grandpa and
Lost Boys. Grandpa and Lost Boys.
And Blossom.
Oh, how about
that? That's right.
Did you know this literally came out a year after Creepshow, this pilot?
Oh, I'm not surprised. They were probably like, this is a good idea to do an anthology series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Richard Rubenstein was also behind that too, and he was behind Creepshow.
Yep.
And it's... famously Creepshow 3.
In terms of creepy theme songs, all right, so I just got to throw this out here because I think it's related.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy theme songs, Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Crypt, The X-Files, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Who wins out in terms of the creepiest?
Tales from the Dark Side for me is the opening credits alone with that music.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before. I can't remember if it was on Losers Club or Halloweenies, but there was one year I went to Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando, and they had there was like a street you walk down to get to this haunted circus, and they would play the theme song to Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, God.
And, you know, just on loop, essentially. And it was so creepy because, you know, they just tap into that. And when you first watch it, like, it by no means should, you just don't think it should be scary. But, man, it just gets under your skin.
Well, it's that hour I always talk about. And honestly, it's when I've been walking lately, where it's just twilight. And it's just, you have that safe veneer of the daylight that's still there. And then once it switches, you're like, oh, wait a second. Everything looks different. And the little opening credits of that captures it perfectly.
I know. It reminds me of, it's kind of like the Dead Zone credits, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just like seemingly a simple town, but like something's off. And I think that is going to be a little bit of a through line here. It's like, there's something off about these episodes in a good way, you know?
Largely non-existent to stream at this point anymore. I don't know what the fuck happened to them. I used to, because I was streaming them for a while, and then last time I checked, they were gone. Yeah,
they'll show up again on something.
Possibly streaming on Tubi something like that. Yeah. You know,
it's unfortunate.
Justin,
all right, fuck the rules. Tales from the Dark Side. I have to do this episode.
Oh,
I'm breaking the rules.
Whoa, you're breaking it.
Because to be honest, my alternate was going to be Zeebo that you mentioned earlier, Mike.
Well, you can still mention it. I don't have
any information. Look, it was the second episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark? Tale of the Laughing in the Dark. Great episode. Tales of the Dark Side, Season 4, Episode 14, May 8th, 1988, The Cuddy Black Sal.
I thought that you were going to have Justin. This. Mac, yeah. I thought that when you mentioned that, that's what I thought you were going for.
It's right up there, but yeah, I had to.
Well, let me break this down, too.
For The Witch Alone.
So, again, this was on syndication, you know, and I guess I probably watched it the week it was on. It was in rerun time. I probably watched this the week it was on, living in Phoenix in mid-88. And the backstory for this is it stars this little boy, very effective young actor. His name is Huckleberry Fox, by the way. Probably not even a stage name with these crazy kids back in the day. But what I remember him from, and a lot of people back in the era, in that age, he was the little cute kid in the Crunch and Munch commercials back in the 80s. Like, he would be at the table like, oh, I want to get my Crunch and Munch, you know, really cute kid. He's basically the same character in this. So we're watching and thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be Well, maybe it'll be a little creepy, but it'll be fine. It's a little kid from Hunch, you know, Crunch and Munch commercials. And here's the plot. Young Jamie receives and takes seriously a deathbed warning from his great-grandmother to guard against the legendary Cuddy Black Sal. So she passes away. He's home at night with his sister, I believe, and his parents have to go out to a party, so he's left alone. And he keeps thinking he sees this Cuddy Black Sal. And of course, everything's fine throughout the episode until the very end. And I think, didn't we watch this together, Mike? Didn't I finally find it with Randall?
Yeah, we watched it at Randall's old place.
Yeah,
that's right.
I remember that.
But I always, you know, I think this might be why I'm so allergic to a lot of hug me horror, because there's definitely a hug in this episode, but it's not the type of hug you're expecting.
Yeah.
And this has stayed with me. It's one of the most unforgiving horror endings I've ever seen. And it was a syndicated horror TV show. It's pretty brutal. Yeah. And if you can find it out there, still works really well. It's just a really creepy monster ghost story. And written, I did a little research, written by Michael McDowell, who also was on the scripts for Beetlejuice and Nightmare Before Christmas, and adapted Thinner for Tom Holland.
What the hell?
And the director is Richard Glass, literally his only credit for anything on IMDb.
What?
That's crazy, because this is extremely well directed.
Is he related to Philip Glass?
Maybe he just went to tinker the piano.
He was like, you know, give me a shot.
Yeah, but I had to break the rules, because once we decided we were going to do this episode, I was like, okay, well, I got to do the Cuddy Block style.
Yeah.
So, well, look, shout out to us from the dark side. Shout out to us from the dark side.
That's a good one. That's good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, creepy. Now that you broke the rules, it's better time that you flee the States and join me across the pond, Governor, for an episode of Black Mirror.
Mm.
Ooh, I think I had one on my list too, but go for it.
So it's the post-series 2 Christmas special, White Christmas. December 16th, 2014. I don't want to spoil anything about this episode, because it's really important that you don't have the details spoiled. So, you know, especially for those who haven't seen it, and they might not have, because this was around the time they were still doing the BBC run. So it was, you know, you really had to have the BBC to fucking watch it. But in a word, cold. And in two words, ice cold. You know, as is the case with all the best Black Mirror episodes, I think the commentary of this one is really rich, especially when you think about how we just freely mute and block people online. But really what gets to me is just kind of the unnerving revelation at the end, and the ramifications also that come with it, and kind of given where we're going technologically, you know, you keep hearing things, you know, through Google Alerts and on Twitter, just like things that have been going on, and technological advancements. And you look back at Black Mirror episodes, especially this one, and you're like, man, we're really not that far off from doing something like this. And it's scary. Like, it's fucking scary. And this is, you talk about something that sticks with you before, you know, it's eight is enough. Like, this is one that I saw on Christmas time of 2014 at my ex-wife's house. And this one, it just gave me pause, and it still gives me this like dreadful hypnosis. I've only seen it once. I'll probably never watch it again.
Well, Mike, I have a question for you. I'm racking my brain, because this was a special.
Yeah.
It was a Christmas special. I think, weren't there like three stories?
There are. There are three stories. They're interweaving. Like John Hamm and Rafe Spall are like the main.
I remember
they're
that.
Told
that's
by them.
The through line, basically.
Yeah, it's the through line of that. And then they have like three seemingly singular stories that are actually somewhat interlocked together. So for me, this was probably at the time when they were going to be like, all right, Black Mirror, this was good. This was a fun run. And in hindsight, they should have done it, because
I agree. Cause it just goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Well, now it's when it became American involvement.
They've got a chip in their head.
Yeah.
That's what they all are now, you know?
But this felt like such a button on everything that they were trying to say, and it wove in like all the themes that they had for the first two seasons prior to that. And it's so fucking nihilistic. And that's something that you still get it sometimes in a lot of newer Black Mirror episodes, but like nothing like this. Like, this is like Richard Matheson level of like singular terror. And I love it. I love it.
Well, it still felt extremely fresh. And I think it was the first kind of crossover episode, wasn't it?
Yeah,
because John Hamm was in there, and that was it had been all British.
All
I think, the
British.
First season or
two.
It seems like 35 years ago, but really was only 8 years ago.
I know, it's crazy to think.
I think I watched the episode in bed on Mega Upload when they were still able. When you're still able to download stuff.
Shortly after you're doing the Friday Night Lights.
I did. I watched Friday Night Lights a year before everybody else, because nobody in the world had DirecTV.
Yeah,
I watched this show called Ashes to Ashes, which was a sequel to the show Life on Mars.
Yeah.
Still unavailable in the States. It was on BBC America.
Yeah.
But if you missed it, you're screwed, because now you can't find it anywhere.
Yeah. So. The only good thing about that is that by the time it finally comes out, I'll be ready to rewatch
Life on Mars.
Life on Mars, because it's been so long.
Very good show.
But let me throw out the two real quick that I couldn't do. It's Squeeze, X-Files.
Hey, totally.
Tombs. Speaking of one of two.
Yeah. The ending of that episode where he's just looking at the little slot in the jail and the music's playing. And Mark Snow's music that just chilling. Definitely check that out. And then,
you know, I will say, Mac, to cut you off.
Yeah.
I think the sequel to that is actually still pretty good.
It is. The same season,
Tombs is good, too. But
it's not like the sequel to the Donnie Faster one.
But
by any means. It's still good.
I think it's just the less is more. Like, we just don't get enough of him in the first one, where it's like, it's a lot of it's still like left to your imagination, I think.
Yeah, true.
And it's very, yeah, because after Tombs, I couldn't look at an escalator the same way again.
Mm. Who do you think is creepier, Tombs or the actor who plays him?
That's a great question, Mike.
Yeah.
I think the actor who plays him is pretty creepy. Great actor, though. Too bad.
Great actor.
Great character,
I know.
Actor.
Great
unfortunate.
In a lot of things.
Great in as Percy in The Green Mile.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
What was your other one?
The other one was White Bear.
Oh, yeah.
From season two of Black Mirror. I that is just unnerving. The ending is good, but most of the episodes I'm talking about, where it's just you just don't know. And it's really
it's with the
chased.
Actor from Being Human.
From Being Human.
Yes, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. The twist is a little, you know, they do the same twist a couple years later with the kid who's watching porn and gets caught.
Yeah.
A similar twist. Mm, anyway. Yeah. But yeah, very good episode, Mac.
Good stuff.
It is, yeah, it's good. All right. Well, my last and my final pick. So I wanted to pick something. I'm like, what have I watched recently that really disturbed me? And I've had a hard time thinking of it because we've been very dismissive of this gentleman lately, but Mike Flanagan, for me, it's the Bent Neck Lady episode of the first season of The Haunting of Hill House, or the only season, I guess. But that so much of that show, like the ending or not, whatever, so much of that show is just dreadful. Like it's just a chore to watch because it is just, it runs you through the ground. And that episode, I just remember being, even if you can call it, it just, your heart sinks at the end of that episode. And I just think it's really effective and really well done.
I agree 1,000%.
Something I want to say about that show, other shows aside, I understand people not liking the ending because, you know, the book's just perfect, but you know, it's so depressed. The whole show is so depressing. I genuinely was like, okay, that's all right. Cause I was just like, I can't deal with it anymore. I think the last episode is a little precious, but anyways, Bent Neck Lady, that genuinely as an adult, I was just like, oh my God, you know? And I think that he's really good at throwing in those random ghosts in the house. That is just chilling enough where, I can't tell you how many people I talked to after watching these episodes. And I'm like, did you see it? And they're like, no. And you know, like different ghosts in the house. There's like little things.
I almost chose this one.
It's a really well structured episode. I think it's a great episode.
Yeah.
I've really thought about this as to why I'm kind of getting, I used that word allergy earlier, but I'm kind of allergic to a lot of Flanagan stuff is because, I mean, listen, he's the origin of why we do the hashtag Hug Me Horror.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, he takes The Innocence, the book, you know, The Turn of the Screw, The Innocence, that's what Bly Manor is based on. Incredibly disturbing. Material, very dark ending. And he takes The Haunting, Haunting of Hill House is based on, and of course the book, The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. Incredibly haunting, dark ending. And he gives you like a sweet little hug and makes you want to cry at the end. I feel like he makes a lot of this stuff just so he can run on Twitter and get the reaction from people saying that they cried or something. I mean, I don't know why he has this need to kind of pull back.
I do feel like it started around like this time, because you look back at Oculus and Oculus is a fucking guttural punch. And so is Before I Wake. And so is a lot of like,
So is his first other movie that is pretty good. I forgot the name of it. No,
it's his first one. I know what you're talking about.
It's a dark ending.
The low
it's
budget
a dark
one.
Ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, what was the, was it Hush? That's the one where it actually started that way, because it became kind of like a, you know, an arc of like, you know, the sort of triumph of the will of like, you know, being able to get over your own like fears and demons and stuff like that, and being able to triumph over them and
Absentia, by the way, is what I'm thinking of. Absentia.
I understand that there's a need and a want for films like that. And I think that for people going through really difficult things, if you're turning to horror, there is a subgenre now. It's called Hug Me Horror. and you could get those lessons, and you can feel like you've battled the evil and you've overcome it and you're stronger for it, and still enjoy a horror movie. Great. Not my cup of tea.
That's where I'm coming from. And that's why, and obviously it does something for people, but it doesn't do anything for me.
I want to be scared. I want the dark ending. I do think that when you're doing, I guess I didn't mind it so much in that first one because I was
either.
Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, The Haunting's been done a bunch, and, you know, whether it's like plays and whatever, it's just been adapted a bunch. And I do, and I feel like.
But they changed it so drastically to begin with. I'm like, well, why don't you just have a creepy ending also? Instead of that confetti ending, I'm getting goosebumps.
I know.
When she says it's all confetti, I was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I know we're veering off, but.
Wait, what confetti ending?
That's when she's at the very end of The Haunting of Hill House. She says that line like, it's in the end, it's all confetti or some bullshit. And it's like supposed to be like this. Oh, that's what she said when she was all.
Yeah, and then it kind of just ends. Cringe.
You're like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, to what Mac was saying, to piggyback on it, it's like at that point, it hadn't happened so often that I was like, all right, well, it was kind of a reprieve.
I was able to swallow the pill.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't jumping up and down going, yes, this is better than the book. Because you're right, Justin, they did change it so much that to me, it was like, well, you could just do whatever you want. So, and then in that sense, I was like, well, you did that. You put your own stamp on it. Okay. It wasn't what I would have done, but. You know what? You gave us like at least 8 episodes of pretty good, dreadful,
ghost-ridden
stuff that I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah.
It was really just the last couple where it just kind of lost its way a little bit for me. But
give you a little hug.
Well, I mean, Mac, I did mull over this one, and I inevitably stay away from it for Hug Me Horror Thoughts, but because I actually thought you guys would all rack on me for it. But like,
No. Like I said, I watched all of that. I watched all of his stuff.
Yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
A lot of that I do like, and I'm so interested in it. And I just feel like a lot of the time he just loves the fandom. Like I just think that's what he thinks about the fandom before anything. I really do believe that now.
The tall man in the hallway knocking with the thing.
Oh, terrific.
I remember watching that. Sammy had just moved here, and we were watching on my laptop in pitch black in my room. And I remember like we had to like watch like I feel like we had to watch like Scrubs or some fucking bullshit like sitcom afterwards, because I was so scared of like anything tall. Like I've told you guys my Abraham Lincoln fear as a kid, but like anything tall,
like Phoebe Cates and Gremlins 2 over here.
I am basically that. But that scene where the kid looks out and he sees him walking through the hallway in the middle of the dark, like in the middle of the night with the darkness, like
that's your worst nightmare as a kid.
Oh, absolutely, right? my worst nightmare. Yeah. So that stuff would have been great.
Mike, in the end, it's all confetti. You
know? It's true. It is all confetti.
You need to, Mike, the artwork for this episode has got to have like confetti falling from the top.
Yeah. the Criterion cover for Haunting of Hill House.
No, I'm saying for this episode when you're promoting it,
oh,
you
get put the collage. The
you got to have like confetti at the top falling all right. down.
Yeah. Yeah. Mac, do you have any final thoughts on Flanagan?
Oh, I was just going to say that there's a subtle moment where if you don't catch it, you don't catch it. But there's a moment in another episode where they're like, it's broad daylight. They're in the kitchen, I think. And in one of the armoirs, like in the reflection, there's a ghost like looking at the kids. And
this is a good example.
And if you catch it, it's so scary. Yes. But if you don't catch it, that's why I think with that show, especially that show, it's a rewatch. You've got to rewatch that because you're always going to catch little things you didn't catch the first time. And I think it's really effective. Although dreadful rewatch because it is. I did rewatch those episodes though, I feel, leading up to the next one, because there were things that I wanted to catch or things people said, oh, I saw this. Did you see this? And I go back and I rewatch at least those scenes, you know?
Yeah.
But
well, that's a good example of Easter eggs. Because the other day I made a little comment on Easter eggs, but those are good Easter eggs because if you don't notice them, it's fine.
Yeah.
If you notice them, it creeps you out. And that's what an Easter egg should be. It shouldn't just be this blatant in your face.
Blue milk.
You know, Michael Myers has got a knitting needle to Laurie's face or something like that. You know what I mean?
That sounds pretty fun. It sounds like a subversion that we got.
Either reminded
going
me of, Mike, when I saw that pic, that reminded me of that scene in the first Halloween when Laurie stabs Michael with the knitting needle.
Remember I'm not that? Sure if that was intentional or not, but we'll definitely find out.
That did happen in the original. Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. Are there commentary tracks for these new Halloween movies? It'd be interesting if we like actually like did a
the
live commentary track
you should be listening
on
to
those
are
commentary.
Ours.
Yeah. All right. Round it out. What's your third?
Going back to when I was a kid, there was this great VHS called Creepy Classics that Vincent Price hosted. And it would just be this.
I know.
It was basically, you can find it on YouTube. You can find all this stuff on YouTube. And it was just this 30-minute clip show of kind of old 50s, 60s, pretty much B-horror movies, Roger Corman movies. They do have, like, Night of the Living Dead in there, too. But they also have a clip from I Was a Teenaged Werewolf. Now, this was years before I had any notion that this would also be incorporated into Stephen King's It or anything. I just remember being amazed that it was played by a very young Michael Landon. Now, for all you kids out there, Michael Landon, you look back, was a huge TV star from 1959 to 1989. Because after he was in I Was a Teenage Werewolf, I think for 13 years, he was on Bonanza. Then for another 7 years, he was on, or another 8 years, he was on Highway to Heaven. I'm sorry, no, Little House on the Prairie. And then for another 7 years, he was on Highway to Heaven. So 30 years of just constant work. But he is the teenage werewolf in that aforementioned movie. And in the episode that aired on October 28th, 1987, season 4, episode 5 of Highway to Heaven, Michael Landon wrote and directed a Halloween episode of that show called I Was a Middle-Aged Werewolf. Now, the plot of this show is his character, Jonathan. It's basically a touched by an angel before touched by an angel.
Yeah.
He goes around. He's like he's a new angel. He goes around. He's being escorted by this character named Mark, taking him around the country, helping people, basically. He's like a guardian angel, you know? And Michael Landon's like TV dad heaven, so you believed he was actually an angel. Well, this episode starts off with the character Mark literally watching I Was a Teenaged Werewolf and telling Jonathan how much he looks like the actor. I mean, it's very meta. It's very aware of itself. But as the episode goes on, Mark falls asleep while Michael Landon goes out to help little Eldon Henson, the actor from Idle Hands. He plays Foggy on Daredevil. He's like 6 years old in this episode.
Oh, wow.
So he's helping him kind of take a little light revenge on these bullies. And he becomes the werewolf from I Was a Teenage Werewolf, like as a magic trick, basically. And so, I mean, it's pretty creepy when you look back. But that, even as a kid, I was like, wait, what the hell's going on here? His friend Mark is back home having nightmares about the movie, and he dreams that Jonathan comes back to the house and turns around. He's like looking off. You don't see his face. He turns around. He's full makeup werewolf. And there's a scene later on where he's got the same nightmare. You think everything's fine. He goes to the kitchen, opens up the fridge, and Michael Landon jumps out in the werewolf makeup. It scared the shit out of me. He jumps out of the fridge and starts attacking him. And so, you know, of course, at the very end, this stuff actually does happen. He does break down the door, and he's, you know, Jonathan, he's the werewolf. And just as he's about to kill Mark, he stops, looks at the camera, and says, "Happy Halloween." Freeze frame ending. I thought, I watched it today. Oh my God.
It's great.
Chills now. So fun. And a little horror connection is his son is Christopher Landon, the writer director of Happy Death Day, Happy Death Day 2, and Freaky. So nice. He wrote a really nice message to his, because I guess his dad, Michael Landon died pretty young of cancer in 1991. And last year, Christopher Landon had cancer. I don't know if you remember that.
Man.
And he wrote, I guess on his anniversary, he said, we said goodbye 30 years ago today. Blows my mind how fast times go, but I kept my promise and I've lived and loved as hard as I can until we meet again. So they had a good relationship. But anyway, great episode, a really fun episode. And rewatching it today, I hadn't seen it in 30 years, and I still vividly remember everything that happened. Like I didn't misremember anything. You know, there was no nostalgia. It was all vivid. But yeah, that scared the hell out of me as a kid. And then, of course, revisiting it and having it come back again.
Yeah.
How about that, you know?
Perfect, perfect. Yeah. Well, we have one more that we kind of have to all agree on.
Oh, yeah.
We doubled up on a few, but we didn't put Are You Afraid of the Dark on here. And you mentioned Zeebo. Man. That would be my vote. I think that
for
out of
kids.
It especially, there are some other episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark that still work. Like, I think the one with the X-ray eyes is pretty fucking scary. But like,
yeah, that creeped me out.
Well, that was a creepy ending.
I had nightmares about that.
That one's so creepy.
The mall one ends. Well, because I like a lot of these endings. I guess we're kind of on the topic. I was thinking about some of these endings of these Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes, like the one with where the kid thinks that there's vampires next door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it turns out it's actually the adults are taking care of a vampire, as it turns out. It's amazing. Like, those had like scary endings.
Yeah.
But Mike Flanagan's terrified to give you sharing. Like, I don't understand. Like, what is the deal here?
You got
freaking Nickelodeon shows that are like not pulling their
most
punches.
Most of the Are You Afraid of the Dark episodes usually ended pretty like gnarly. I remember one that was like the kid ends up being like he's like a pinball wizard, and then he's in the mall and he's still in the pinball machine.
You think he got out, but he didn't get out.
Yeah, which is so fucking dark. But Zeebo's so like chilling, and we had put it on like a few years ago. I guess there was a YouTube feed of like all of them on there, and we just had him on the background one afternoon while Sammy was napping. And just that first episode of Zeebo, which it kicks off at, it sets such a high watermark because it's so mean, it's so eerie, and it uses like so many tropes that we are familiar with from 80s movies, but also ones that would come to define a lot of movies from the 90s. And it still works for me, in my opinion. I can watch it now and get creeped out.
It was the second episode, because the first one was the hitchhiker guy. Remember that
one? Yeah.
But he does appear in this as the carnival barker. But I remember this was on SNCC, and SNCC was a brand new Saturday evening programming thing. They had, it was great lineup. It was Clarissa Explains It All, Ren and Stimpy, Roundhouse, and Are You Afraid of the Dark? It's like this great 2-hour block for years. And yeah, this was one of the inaugural shows. And think about this, though. The power of this show also is that people are now officially terrified of clowns, because 2 years earlier it had come out.
Yep.
Yeah. And then 91 ABC re-aired it. Yep. And so then you got 92. This is like as close as you can get for literally being directed towards children. And yeah, it's still creepy.
You know what also happened? John Wayne Gacy, who's also a clown.
Oh, yeah. But see, I was too young. I didn't know anything about Gacy when I was 12 years old. It took me a couple of years before I stumbled upon that nightmare, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
But you never see, you don't ever see Zeebo walking around or doing something. No. It's
that's
all
what's so scary.
The aftermath.
Yep.
And there's like evidence of him being around. And it's just, and then the laughter and stuff. It's really, you know, restrained. And I think that is, once again, more scary than showing us the actual thing. Like, if you know how to walk that line, use the viewer's imagination. It's always going to be ultimately more scary than what you can show us. So, and they walk that line in that episode. It's really fun.
Yeah, I always wondered like what happens. Like, Zeebo's going to kill you, right? I mean, like that's what it seemed like.
I think he wanted it's basically a takeoff on the old folklore. The big toe, like, you know, that kid steals the big toe, it belongs to a giant, the giant wants it back. It's basically a takeoff on that.
But they're in the latter season, and I think season 3 or 4 or something, I was kind of out at that point, but they were supposed to do a Zeebo sequel.
What?
And then it ended up becoming a film called The Hudsucker Proxy.
Okay, here we go. Well, now we're done. Now we are officially done.
That clown of a movie.
Yeah, not a big fan of that one somehow. But
so are we good to put that as 10, or do we have another alternate?
Fine.
I'm good throwing that on there because this has mostly been about what scared us as children.
It's true.
And, you know, that's what you should really do. What scared us from as kids? What had the biggest impact on us as kids? With a sprinkling of adult stuff. As long as you market it that way, people won't be confused. It's like, why are these 40-year-olds being scared of, you know, Highway to Heaven?
Well, it's funny because we were going to have it as the 10.
Nothing scares me now, right?
Well, nothing scares me. You know? Except financial instability.
That's right.
Yeah, I would say, because we can't really label this like the 10 scariest episodes of television, right?
No.
Unfortunately, we can't because that's a great title, but we'll kick it around. That'll be our next task that we have over the next 3 days. Well, this is fun. I mean, I apologize to Hollywood. There were no free ideas on this episode, but we do have some free suggestions for you listeners out there that you can all stream.
Well,
out there.
Mike, I got a huge record scratch here.
Oh, what happened?
I found out the director of this episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
He also directed a favorite of mine and Mike Vanderbilt's, Prom Night 3, The Last Kiss.
Oh, wow.
And, sorry, I'm literally scrolling as we do this. He also wrote that, and he wrote Prom Night 2. Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
Well, he also did Beethoven's Treasure Tale.
He sure did. He did a bunch of Goosebumps episodes, too, for you you kids. A lot of Christmas movies. We probably get paid a lot of money for those Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Wow, that's wild. Well, this is fun. I'm not going to go through my whole rigmarole that I just did. So let's just talk about what we got next. September, October. Well, we've got Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Hey, it's a Sam Raimi movie. There are Evil Dead connotations. Mac, you're leading this one. It's going to be, you're going to take us to some wild places.
Let me just tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got that episode coming up in a week. And then Caffrey is going to lead us. He's going to hit the pedal of metal with The Hitcher. That's going to be our rental on in our Patreon. That's
one of those hug me horror ones too, I think.
The Hitcher. Oh yeah, it's a real feel good movie. Let me tell you about it.
Gather up your kids.
Jesus,
it's a good one.
Christ, yeah. Was that Thomas Howell's rebound after Soul Man, or was that?
Just before Soul Man.
Oh, okay, well,
Soul Man was creeping around the corner.
All right, well, that's certainly not a
real horror story.
That's just a horror story itself. But and then we got Haddonfield, Halloween Man. Ends, The Shape, so much Halloween content around the corner, in addition to little surprises, in addition to our recorded content. We're going to be doing a live show. How about that? So at the Music Box, we're going to be presenting Return of the Living Dead 2. I believe we're doing this on the night that Halloween Ends comes out as a fuck you to Halloween Ends, I guess. No, I'm just kidding. We're not doing that. But it is something that we are going to be doing on the October 14th, which is when Halloween Ends hits Peacock. And
it was, I think ideally people will go see Halloween Ends when they get out of work, or if they're not working that night.
And come
then
out.
Come right over and have a fun time. That'd be great, actually. Have a good time, because we will have already seen it.
Yes.
We're the after party, right?
Yeah, we are the after party. We're always the after party.
Head over to the Music Box Theater Friday, October 14th.
Yeah.
And it's been announced.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a live show before we host Return of the Living Dead Part 2 at the Music Box Theater.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
And honestly, the live show will probably be a lot like what we just did now, where it's like a list.
It's a fun list.
Yeah. So we got Strange, we got The Shape, we got The Dead. We got Damun, so you could do a lot worse. As always, we hope you
join us.
This is the end of our show, for now. We hope you enjoyed this production. If you like our programming, consider searching for other Bloody Disgusting podcasts, such as Creepy, Horror Queers, The Boo Crew, SCP Archives, Nightlight, Margaret's Garden, and more.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.